Okay, as you know, one of the main features of our show is offering tips and advice for collectors looking to get the most value out of their hard-earned reward points. Today, we're talking about a behavior many of us, including today's guest and myself, have been guilty of. And I'm talking about reward point hoarding. It's my pleasure to welcome Rob Carrick, longtime personal finance columnist for the Globe Mail, author of several personal finance books, and host of the Because Money podcast. Rob has interviewed Patrick over the years on the loyalty point industry, and so it's great to have a chance to flip the mic and ask him a few questions. So welcome, Rob.
Thanks very much.
All right, Rob. Well, look, you recently wrote a piece where you admitted to being a reward point hoarder. Why don't you tell us what swayed you to change your...
That's true. I'm trying to reform that behavior, though, because, it really hit me with the air miles thing. This goes back a few years, you know, remember when they did that major overhaul, and I had been collecting air miles slowly for years and years and years, and I kept thinking, I'm going to get a big bunch of points and do something with them. And then all of a sudden, before they double clutched at the last minute, I thought I had to burn off these points. And so I was sort of doing it under the gun and not getting any great rewards. And I thought, this is stupid. I've hoarded these for like more than 10 years and I don't feel like I'm getting the best value out of it. So since then, you know, I go to the supermarket and they say, you have $10 worth of air miles to redeem. Would you like to? I say, yes, please. And I get it done bit by bit now.
Yeah. And you're referring to the Air Miles Cash program. It's interesting because in many ways, Rob, these programs, these larger programs, Air Miles, Aeroplan, they've conditioned us, right, to become hoarders in some respects, because if you think about it, they put those big dream rewards out there, say,
right,
trip, and,
right,
you know, we've ultimately been conditioned to it. But to your point about how these programs change, suddenly their rules or the redemption rates go up, It's important that we rethink the way we work these things, right?
I think so. You know what? To me, the pattern, and I observe it over and over and over again, is a card comes out, wants to establish some immediate buzz and, you know, rack up some new customers, and it offers a pretty attractive points earning threshold, and it's a little bit better than everything else. And you know, you naturally think this card is obviously very good. I'm going to jump all over it. And then what happens is you start thinking, I'm going to accumulate points and wait and get something really good. And they change the rules on you and the redemption rate's not as good. And all of a sudden you've accumulated these points and maybe you can't get the same bang for your buck that you hope to get out of it. Or they've taken away some feature or they've recalibrated it somehow. I just think, you know what, when you're in a program like that, you are pinning all your expectations and hopes of success in this program on benefits that may not be there when you get to the finish line. And I think there's a lot to be said for on a sort of reward yourself as you go program.
Yeah, I think you're right, and you made reference to your wife in your piece that's the way she works. She likes to...
Yeah, we used to have this little thing going. She says, I say use the points as they come up, and I would say, no, let's save them for something. And you know what? On the air miles thing, I totally have been converted to her way of doing things. You know what? A $10 or a $20 redemption here and there, you know, trims the grocery bill or the drugstore bill or the gas bill, whatever the heck we're buying using our air miles. And I have to say, it's kind of nice to get to see the cash register ring up one price and then it gets knocked back by $10, $20. I think that's pretty good. I'm happy with that.
Yeah. And, you know, there is something satisfying about that instant gratification as well, right?
Totally. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and I find that, you know, not to speak of any one particular program, but often when you're in the redemption process and you're finding it, oh, I can't get what I want when I want, or I'm going to have to pay the certain fees and that sort of thing. It takes a little of the fun out of it. And I'm just thinking, you know what, chop a few bucks off at the cash register. That's money in my bank account that I didn't spend. That's a really good reward.
Well, I like it. And I, to your point, as well as the experience, you know, so many times we hear, certainly with this podcast and Patrick's blog, of the frustration, the pain point of that redemption journey where, you know, you put all this effort into saving, it comes time for the big payoff and, you know, either those points have gone up or, you know, the inventory's not available. And so, you know, don't bother going through that. Get the redemption
right.
at the cash register instead. That's not a bad way to go.
What I hear people thinking is, I want the best possible bang for buck, and that's a trip, and it's true. That's where you get the best value, but that's only a theoretical thing, and you have to add for practical, real life living. And I think sometimes just cashing in early for dollars and cents or a gift card or something like that, not on mathematically the best, practically in everyday life, it is the best.
Indeed. Well, look, part of the impetus, of course, of your piece was a recent PC Financial sponsored poll that helped put, I guess, this hoarding of points issue into some kind of context. So I just want to read out some of those poll results and we can comment on them. So the poll found that the average dollar value of points people sit on is somewhere in the neighborhood of $832. And then by breaking that down into the different age segments, it found that millennials are sitting on $357 on average. People aged 35 to 54 have an average of $775. And those 54 plus are sitting on balances of $1,256. Is there anything surprising to you in those numbers?
Well, not really. You know what? I think the boomers, the ones who are really actively hoarding the points, you know, they may have had some good experience with points programs. They are the more meticulous, you know, people playing the long game, you know, collecting their points, you know, using their cards well. And I totally get what they're doing. And they probably have this idea of, you know, when I'm retired, we're going to go around the world or we're going to fly to Australia on points. And I just wonder if the bonus they're expecting is going to be there for them when they finally get around to doing it. I just see a lot of potential for disappointment there, and would encourage those people, those boomers with the massive amounts of hoarded points, dip into them now. You know what? Use them up now. Get a partial reward, or pick something you really want, and get that, and be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too when you think of the different age segments. I wondered whether anything else was in play. I mean, would you suggest it makes a whole lot of sense? I also wonder whether or not there's anything to be said about just, you know, this sort of saving mentality that might be more prevalent with the boomers.
That's a good insight. I think you might be onto something there. I mean, the country saving mentality has deteriorated to just trace levels. If you look at the national savings rate, it's just super, super low. I think that's partially because interest rates are low and partially because we just live in a spend world, and you know, debt's much more socially acceptable than it used to be, and that may be impacting the younger generations. But I think from what I understand about millennials, they're very interested in cash back as a type of reward, and that's one that really does lend itself to using up on a regular basis rather than cashing in. I mean, I should say than hoarding.
Yeah, well, you know, it's great. Great that you brought that up, because that is one of the questions we had for you about the cashback. Certainly, the credit card issuers who may have saw, you know, hoarding as an issue for them, I guess many of their proprietary programs went the route of partial redemption options, right? So you could use your points right away, or even if you didn't have enough, you could then pay for the remainder of the redemption cash, right? And so we think that's also why, you know, cash back rewards are increasingly popular, is you don't hoard them. You know, you get paid out, whether that's instantly, monthly, or yearly.
You're
a big fan of those cash back programs, aren't you?
Well, you know what? I was just thinking as we were talking that if I had to pick any class of card that has been more regularly devalued over time, it's the cash back. Like, I've had readers complain steadily over the years. It's always a different card. It started off offering this much cash back, and then they drastically reduced how much cash back you get. It's either the redemption has been reduced or the earning power has been reduced. But cash back seems to me the prime example of a kind of reward card that gets introduced with a big splash, and then they go, you can hear them going click, click, click as they dial back the utility of the card. So I would, if you've got a good cash back card, I think it's great because you can use the rewards often to pay down your balance. So there's a lot of good utility there. I would not be a hoarder of those. I would be using them as they go along, because if you've got a particularly good card, I would be willing to bet that it's not going to be so good 2 years from now.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I have to wonder, Rob, just in general, about the topic of devaluation. Just when you, you know, read the pulse of people and you see the types of things they're complaining about, this is where the cynicism towards this entire industry lies. Because, as you said, I mean, a lot of these programs come out of the gate with these great, you know, big offers, and then they hook you and then change the rules as they go along. Is that, are you still hearing a lot of feedback from your readers when it comes to just their interest in general in these programs?
I think it's probably incrementally eroding faith and interest in these programs. But you know what? People are very, very, they've been trained well by the credit card industry to think that using credit cards is mainly about earning points. Even people carrying big balances think about the points first and foremost. You know, I've done a lot of financial literacy sessions on university campuses and always cautioning young people about credit cards. I used to say avoid them, but now I think I don't really know how you can be a functioning individual in today's economy without a credit card. But I talk about what's the best card and, you know, and never pay fees. And they're all telling me, but what about the points? And I was thinking, you guys aren't spending enough on your cards to ever earn a significant amount of points. So why would you even worry about that? But that's, they think credit cards are mechanisms for earning points. And I think people have been well trained with that. But I think the credit card industry has got to be careful not to over exploit that with these sort of bait and switch cards that are great for 18 months or 2 years or 36 months, whatever, and then get dialed back. Because you do that too often and people are going to people are going to think twice about how many cards they have, or what programs they're involved in. I think they're opening the way for some fintech to come and completely outmaneuver them with a point earning program that's that works a little differently. Anyway, I just think you can only try that trick so many times.
Well, I think so. And, you know, there's another point that you made earlier, just with respect to the boomers, about how they may have had many positive experiences, right, both saving and then redeeming over the years. And that may have, in fact, influenced their kids, right? And so when you say, you know, some of these kids are asking, but what about the points? It could very well be that, you know, they've grown up in households where that's how we finance the, you know, annual family trip.
You know what? I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
Definitely right about that. Yeah, no, there's a lot of generational passing down of this idea of that our points are a core financial asset in our household, and we use them every year for this or for that. But we both know that's probably whatever benefits the parents got over the years have probably been watered down a fair bit to today's levels, and could further be watered down to come. So, you know what? I wonder if the template for going forward is to have a card, ride it for a while, and then when it gets devalued, dump it and you go on to something else. You keep a long running card so that your credit score is, you know, stay strong. But maybe it's a no fee card, and maybe it's like it's just a card you've had for 20 years. You use occasionally, but your real points earning power card is going to change, and you're going to basically be, you know, you're going to sell yourself to the highest bidder every couple of years.
Well, that's an interesting thought. You know, one of the stories Patrick wanted to share, just with respect to other cards, you know, he had this sort of negative devaluation experience with Starbucks, where, you know, he had saved up all these points, and, you know, he thought, well, look, I could redeem them for sandwiches during his kids' busy sports season, right? And so he had, racked up a bunch of them and done. He did the math, and of course, it used to be 125 star points, I think, for food items. He goes to redeem them, and they've jumped them up to 250 points. It was this huge, you know, jump in a short period of time, and, you know, just turned them off the program entirely. I think you hear more and more of those stories where you get hooked on a promise, and you follow the rules, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, what do you mean you've changed it already? That's crazy.
You know, it's very heavy-handed to retroactively devalue points that have been accumulated in the past. It's one thing to say, we are date stamping the points, and from here on, this is what's happening. But to tell someone that, you know, you now have 50 cents on the dollar of every reward you expected you were going to get, that's pretty cynical. You know what? I know there are business people modeling out what is the best possible way for us to handle this, but I think you've made a bad mistake when you do that. And what you end up doing is creating the opposite of loyalty.
Well, you do. And I brought up the Starbucks example because I think it's an important one. You know, a lot of people get introduced to the whole point thing in some of these, you know, if you think again about young people, you know, some of their first experiences with these reward programs, maybe with a company like Starbucks. And when that cynicism sets in early, good luck down the road.
I agree. These young people. You know what it does is it reinforces that idea that I know everybody's going to take, there's going to be a big takeaway at every point. So I'm going to be loyal to this company for a few years and then I am gone and I'm on to the next. You know, I am available to be bought. Who's got the best offer? And, you know, there's a lot of financially savvy young people out there who are understand that, you know, it's not rewarding to pick a few players and be lifelong loyal to them. You know, you're going to want to basically shuffle the deck every so often to see who's got the best deal.
That's right. And they're no strangers for sniffing out the best deal. I mean, that's the one of the great powers of social media these days is people are happy to share where those best deals are.
Absolutely. You know what? You're right. You're right. You're right. It's very easy to do that. It's very easy to develop sort of like a big, maybe, you know, big surge of interest in a particular thing. But you know, the real challenge is, can you keep it up? You know, are these companies even interested in keeping it up? You know, like they seem to be all about acquisition of customers, but what about retention? I guess they're banking on passivity, on people thinking, oh, well, I've got the card, I'll just keep using it. Yeah, I'm mad today, but I'll forget about it tomorrow.
Well, and after all, the whole concept of a loyalty program was, I thought, retaining customers. And so perhaps this is where, you know, there's going to be more emphasis on the experiences and the things that, you know, they can offer up that are exclusive to being associated with that brand. But it is an important question. You know, the worst thing you could do as a brand, I think, is create a promise and then not deliver. And you know, you erode the brand's credibility. So these programs, they have to be very carefully managed, or they can have the, you know, reverse effect.
I would agree. And you think of all the, you know, the affiliate programs where you've got, you know, you're earning points at a variety of different retailers. Each retailer is affiliated with it. You know, you're on the knife edge. You know, you could be doing a good, you could be like giving your customers a positive experience, or you could be teaching them that, you know, there's betrayal here. You know what? We've built up this whack of points to do this sort of thing and they don't work out, and now this retailer is affiliated with this program, I maybe I'll think twice about dealing with them.
100%. Well, Rob, this has been awesome. I think, you know, the main message of today's show for all our listeners is to start using your points as in today, as in right now. In general, as you pointed out, the value of a mile or a point earned today will likely not be the same in the future, and in many cases you'll likely find that those points lose value. So use them. And I'm glad you followed your wife's advice here. And
yeah, no, it's worked out well. You know what? The rule I'm thinking about now is every year, evaluate what your point standing is and think about using them rather than hoarding them.
Yeah, awesome advice. Well, Rob, thanks so much for coming on our show and sharing your thoughts. Of course, be sure to check out Rob in the Globe and Mail. Listen to his podcast, Because Money. And of course, you can reach him on Twitter at R. Carrick. Rob, any other handles that we want to promote here?
No, I'm on Twitter and Facebook. And of course, you can find me, just Google my name in Globe and Mail. I have all kinds of columns and blog posts and everything else for people to check out. I've been writing about this stuff for years. It's one of my favorite topics.
Well, you do an amazing job and you've got a lot of fans. And we really appreciate you joining us today and we hope to do it again. And thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Take care.